welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the other big film for the weekend, and that is A Quiet Place Part 2. John Krasinski directs this sequel in which a mother and her three children try to avoid creatures that hunt by sound while trying to find other survivors after a cataclysm.
I don't know why you came all the way up here.
There's nothing left.
You don't know, do you?
I do.
The people that are left are not the kind of people worth saving.
This was one of the first movie casualties of the coronavirus. It was set to come out like in March or April of last year. I mean, it was like they shut down theaters like a couple weeks before this would have come out. Very similar. Candyman was another one. Mulan was another one of these early casualties that got dropped off the slate of releases. Well, they're finally releasing it now, like 14 months after they originally wanted to. And I'm glad that they're bringing it to theaters. I'm curious to see how well the exclusive theatrical window is going to be, if it makes money or if the wheels aren't greased in the box office quite yet. I mean, eventually we're going to be back to movies making tons of money at the box office, but we may not be there yet. So this is as much a gamble for Paramount as anything else, because Paramount hasn't released anything in the theaters at all. I think the last major release was Sonic the Hedgehog, and that was in February of last year. They had the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, Sponge on the Run, but that dropped on Paramount Plus, the opening when they rebranded Paramount Plus. A Quiet Place Part 2 is Paramount taking a gamble. It's taking the gamble that Warner Brothers did with Tenet last Labor Day. Now, it's a better movie, for sure, than Tenet. I mean, this is a good movie. John Krasinski proves that he was not a one-hit wonder. He did a lot from the same well. He does sort of tread similar ground. The whole gist of the story is these people can't make noise, and you've got these monsters coming after him. Now, at the end of the first movie, they basically figure out a way to disable the monsters enough that they can then kill them. And, I mean, it literally picks up right after the last movie, like from the last frame of the first movie. But it does sort of retreat a bit and make the mom and her kids terrified of the monsters again without going on the offensive that they had been before, which I felt that was a little bit weak of doing it, because I'm like, oh, all of the, you know, effort that they put in the first movie, a lot of it deflates and gets back to the, oh God, we're terrified, we got to walk on ashes all the time till we don't attract these creatures. Whereas I think that could have been handled better, but we still fall into that, you know, the creature stalking and then you have to be quiet. And those are effectively done. They're very expertly edited and put together, and the pacing is great. The big difference between, there's two big things. One of them is they flash back to the beginning of when this happened. You know, we go back to, we basically Bird Box it. If you remember the movie Bird Box on Netflix, where it flashes back to when Sandra Bullock and Sarah Paulson, the first attack happened from whatever this thing was that was causing the stuff in Bird Box. And we see that as well. The money they spent on this movie, the extra money that they spent, because the first one was done on the cheap, this one they threw more money at because it made so many bucks at the box office. You could have this big opening sequence of when the attacks first started. The other big difference is it's about them trying to find people as opposed to cowering and hiding, which is kind of what the first movie was. The first movie was people just trying to stay safe and going out only when they needed to. And this one, they're venturing out to find other people, and we are questioning whether people are worth connecting with. And they meet different types of people, some good and some bad. And it's exactly what you would expect would happen. It's not as punishingly depressing as some movies where it's like everybody that you would meet out there is horrible. But there's always going to be horrible people out in the wilderness and out in the world. You will never get rid of bad people. But they do open up to other communities and different people and options for them. What I wanted to see from the end of the first movie is I really wanted to see them go on the offensive against these creatures. And we are still taking a lot of time to get to a point where they're setting something up where they could go on the offensive. But like I said, it's John Krasinski kind of replaying the hits, and it works for that matter. It's suspenseful and it's effective and it's creepy. And, you know, I'd like to see more of what he does. I think he has a real knack for this, and I want to see him do something objectively different next time, because I wouldn't want his entire career to be defined as a series of Quiet Place movies, because he certainly has some promise and I think he can do a lot more. So I'm going to have to say A Quiet Place Part 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Launchpad from Disney Plus. The Walt Disney Company offers an opportunity for young, underrepresented filmmakers to direct and exhibit short films.
Ooh. Do you want a bedtime story?
Ooh. Okay. An imaginary one. I have a secret.
What's your secret? We're very happy to have you here.
Ooh, I'll sing a song for tomorrow. Ooh.
For the first time, I didn't feel so alone.
It's a very vague description of it, and that's because there is no connection between any of these stories, aside from the very, very loose theme of connections. And the purpose of this series is it's an anthology series. There's 6 episodes right now. And in fact, if you're a filmmaker who's in an underrepresented group, season 2, you can apply through the middle of June, something like June 11th. So if you go to Disney and search up the Disney Launchpad page, you can find a place to apply for this. And what it's meant for is, and we heard a lot about this, you hear about this every year in the Academy Awards, these are underrepresented filmmakers, and there's different people who are involved. There's one filmmaker's Chinese, one filmmaker, I think she might be Pakistani, and there's one that's a non-binary Asian American, and there's a bunch of different underrepresented parts. Disney doesn't restrict them on what they can do. I mean, obviously they can't do anything too extreme. And all these stories, while they have their own story, a lot of them are certainly directed at a social issue. Like, for example, one of them called American Eid is about these Pakistani girls at school. And the school and the kids and the teachers really don't know much about Eid, which is during Ramadan and it's breaking the fast. And it's them trying to come to terms with that. The older daughter is embarrassed by it, and the younger daughter wants to share how great it is. And, you know, so it's an uplifting, open-minded look into that. Another one, that's done by the non-binary Asian American, it's about a little kid who's a boy who likes girly things. He takes ballet class. He likes pink, and he makes a friend at school, and the friend's father is worried because he's not acting like a quote unquote regular boy. And so these are like the issues are right in the forefront, but then there's other ones that it's sort of like in the background. There's one called Growing Fangs, and it's made by a Mexican American filmmaker, I think. And the characters are Mexican-Americans, but they are monsters. They're like, she's like half vampire. Her dad's, I think, human. Her mom's a vampire. She goes to this monster school, basically. But it's just like, you know, vampires and werewolves and that sort of thing who are in the school. And it's just this weird little backdrop. And she just, her family happens to be Mexican. And I think you could probably pull a little bit of a metaphorical symbolism with being an outsider, being somebody who's half human, half vampire is like saying, oh, you know, you're half European and you're half Mexican. And I can see where you can take some metaphorical notes from that. But overall, it's just a cute little high school story. And then, like I said, these are new filmmakers, so they're a little heavy-handed. But they do a good job, and I commend Disney for taking a chance to grow and expand. And this is giving a leg up for some of these folks to get a foot in the door, and I think that's great. So if you're curious to see these, you can. I think they're very Disney-friendly, so you can watch them with the family. So I'm going to have to say they kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Fugitive and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Prince's Voyage.
My mom is a breast cancer survivor. The United Breast Cancer Foundation saved her life. Their free breast cancer exam caught the cancer early, and that saved her life. But now the foundation needs your help so they can continue offering free or low-cost breast screening exams, saving more women's lives. Help them by donating your car, whether it's running or not. They'll provide fast, free 24-hour pickup, and you receive a charitable tax deduction, plus the great feeling you'll get knowing your donated car is going to help save more lives. Just call 800-741-9778 to set the wheels in motion. They take cars, trucks, vans, and SUVs, running or not. Call 800-741-9778. The United Breast Cancer Foundation needs your help, and your donation could literally save women's lives, helping them catch breast cancer early, like they did with my mom. Donate today, 800-741-9778. That's 800-741-9778.